This episode of K Voice of Resistance was recorded at 6 p.m., March 12th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Resist!
Hi, thanks for listening to K Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly.
Get out on Tuesday, vote for Rick Saccone, and we can leave right now.
If you are listening to the show on Tuesday and you live in Pennsylvania, then I hope you are listening in line at the voting booth.
Vote!
Voters in Pennsylvania's 18th Congressional District will decide if they would rather have Democrat Connor Lamb,
retired Marine and former federal prosecutor,
or Republican,
is President Trump popular in Western Pennsylvania?
Rick Saccone.
They say that the other side is energized. Let me tell you, they're energized for hate for our president. I've talked to so many of these on the left. And they have a hatred for our president. I tell you, many of them have a hatred for our country. And I'll tell you some more. My wife and I saw it again today. They have a hatred for God. Yes. It's amazing. Yes. You see it when I'm talking to them. It's disturbing to me.
For a Pennsylvania congressional seat. The seat opened after Family Values Republican Representative Tim Murphy, who was staunchly anti-abortion, resigned following reports that he asked his mistress to get an abortion.
Hypocrite.
Donald won the 18th district by nearly 20 points in the 2016 election, with 58% of the vote. But the wind is at our back. A recent Emerson College survey found that Democrat Connor Lamb was leading Saccone by 48 to 45. The Center for Responsive Politics reported that both sides had spent a total of $15.6 million. 10.9 were spent by Republican Saccone, and only 4.74 were spent by Connor Lamb. Here's the thing. Should Lamb win, we should be very happy and take it as a good sign for the blue wave that should be coming in 2018. But that being said, Saccone is a terrible candidate, so it does not mean as much as I would like it to should we win. So we'll have to see.
Vote, vote, vote.
Let's check in with This Week in Congress. This week, the House is finally getting around to taking up its first school safety bill in the wake of the Parkland, Florida massacre. Now, the bill they're taking up is not exactly a big step towards keeping our schools safe. In fact, it might not be a step towards keeping our schools safe at all. H.R. 4909, this bill, the Stop School Violence Act of 2018, would reauthorize the Secure Our Schools grant program with $50 million annually through fiscal year 2028. The program is currently being funded with $30 million annually. Grants could be used for 1. Training law enforcement, school personnel, and students. 2. Developing and operating anonymous reporting systems for threats of school violence, including hotlines, websites, and mobile apps. 3. Security assessments and coordination with local law enforcement. 4. Installing and using deterrent measures like metal detectors and locks. And 5. Other measures that may provide significant improvement in security. I personally don't want more law enforcement in schools, especially in schools where there are students of color for obvious reasons. I think that they could dedicate a good chunk of the money towards after-school programs and things like that, which would keep kids far safer. Not to mention the fact that in the wrong hands, these funds will go towards all the wrong things, like arming teachers.
Where a teacher would have a concealed gun on them.
You're not helping!
Also this week, both chambers will consider bills to ease the regulatory quote-unquote burden on banks, including many of the banks who are responsible for causing that little crash that we had a few years back that took about, the whole of Obama's presidency to recover from. Listen, guys, it is not too late to try to get the turncoat Democrats off the handout to the banks bill. We still have a chance to stop the sneaky rollback of Dodd-Frank protections.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
The Economic Growth Regulatory Relief and Consumer Protection Act, S-155, is a sneaky rollback of the Dodd-Frank regulations on financial institutions, which were implemented after the 2008 global financial crisis. Current Dodd-Frank regulations require banks valued at $50 billion or more to undergo annual stress tests and be closely monitored. But S-2155 would increase the valuation threshold for monitoring to $250 billion and exempt foreign institutions like
Deutsche Bank.
Altogether,
Deutsche Bank
has been implicated in all this Trump-Russia business. Banks valued at $10 billion or less would also be allowed to sell high-risk mortgages and participate in certain financially risky investment activities. The bill would also eliminate protections for minority customers. And this is a big deal. Customers, such as reporting requirements designed to help regulators and Congress track racially discriminatory patterns in lending. And we know that minorities are targeted for predatory loan practices.
Racism.
S-2155 was initially described as a pro-consumer, pro-small bank bill designed to ease regulatory burdens, but the bill includes few pro-consumer provisions like free credit freezings and safeguards for foreclosure victims. However, these small concessions are far outweighed by the provisions like a ban on suing credit agencies like Equifax for exposing consumers' data to hacks.
Excuse me, what?
Overall, the bill encourages the banking industry to resume the kind of risky profiteering that created the global financial crisis of the last decade. Indeed, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has concluded that the bill makes it significantly more likely that financial institutions will once again require government bailouts due to irresponsible lending practices. Further, the supposedly beleaguered small banking sector has seen significant growth under the current regulations, and they're seeing record profits, indicating that further deregulation is completely unnecessary. While S-2155 is unnecessary and dangerous rollback of requirements on the banking industry, it has support from up to 17 independents and Democrats in the Senate.
You don't say!
Congress must hear loud and clear. Their constituents support strong banking regulations. Please call your Democratic lawmakers. If they are one of the 13 who support this disastrous bill. If you don't know if your senator is one of the 13, call your rep and ask the nice person who takes the call if your senator supports SB 2155. If they do, let them know politely that it is not cool. And if they don't, thank them for standing with the people and protecting our economy. And always be polite.
Ring, ring, hello?
The number is 202-225-3121. Moving on.
If you have a vagina, people have the right to judge you on every single thing you do, even what you do with your vagina.
That is from the funny BBC's MASH report. The war on women is fierce right now, and in places it simply should not be. And we have our faux religious pretend president to thank for this in part. There is this guy, this Scott Lloyd dude, who I've talked about a little in the past. He is an anti-choice fanatic who, for no good reason, has been placed in charge of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR.
Mr. Lloyd, do you believe that a woman's constitutional right to abortion depends on her immigration status?
I think any entry into the United States...
It's a yes or no question, Mr. Lloyd. Do you believe that a woman's constitutional right to abortion depends on her immigration status, yes or no?
A number of rights.
That is not a yes or no question. That is not a yes or no answer, Mr. Lloyd.
My answer is that any number of rights depend on where they stand in terms of our immigration system.
I do not understand that answer. Is that a yes or a no? I'll take that as a no.
To call this man Slime is an assault to Slimer on the Ghostbusters. This Slime feels that not just abortion is immoral, but birth control is. And this Slime is as creepy as it gets. This is from Vice News. Quote, Lloyd receives a spreadsheet every week containing information on every pregnant teen in ORR's custody, including the fetus's gestational age and whether the teen has asked for an abortion. Lloyd says agency policy forbids staff from taking any actions to help a minor in ORR custody get an abortion unless he personally authorizes the procedure, unquote. Ugh. And he has denied 7 girls the rights to privately funded abortions. 3 of them had to win their right in court, thanks to the ACLU.
Love them, like them, donate.
We love the ACLU. And once again, this piece of filth is another conservative wasting taxpayer dollars, our money, pieces that he's simply going to lose in court. As Charlie Pierce put it, quote, this guy is conducting his own personal war on reproductive rights, using detained children as pawns, and conducting it on our dime. Lovely, unquote. So here, in the quote-unquote greatest country on earth, minors actually have the right by law to get an abortion without their parents' approval, so long as a judge gives them permission. This is known as a bypass. Well, one girl under his custody in the ORR had such a bypass because she feared that if her father found out, who still lived back in her home country, that he would retaliate against her mother. And this evil piece of crap, Scott Lloyd, according to emails, instructed his staff to inform the parents anyway. And that wasn't the first time he had done such a cruel thing.
You suck!
And just to make our skin crawl just a little bit more by Lloyd, Lloyd personally visited one teen in ORR's custody who was considering having an abortion in March. And in emails he sent shortly after the visit, Lloyd wondered whether the shelter staff could give the girl more bananas and a better mattress. God. It is no secret here in the ununited states of Christianistan that a woman's sovereignty over her body is under attack. And there is one plan of attack that, while in a way seems like a long shot, could actually work.
Oh no!
Leaders of the anti-choice movement are praying every day for one of the Supreme Court justices, be it Kennedy or any of those to his left, to either retire or die so that their precious president can seat another Christian extremist for a lifetime on the Supreme Court bench, affecting generations of women. The Susan B. Anthony lists, Marjorie Dannenspelzer said the following.
But there's no question that the Supreme Court Justice, Neil Gorsuch, is a complete success. If we can get even one more like Neil Gorsuch, we're talking about overturning Roe v. Wade.
The National Organization for Marriages, Brian Brown, said that Gorsuch's confirmation was a step towards overturning Roe v. Wade and the Obergefell marriage equality decision.
So we're going to need another court decision, and that can happen, and I'm hopeful that will happen not only on Obergefell, but also on Roe versus Wade.
Americans United for Life and the Family Research Council have both fundraised off the possibility that another Trump justice could spell the end of Roe. And the Alliance for Defending Freedom, which is a huge religious right legal group with growing global reach, is backing a 15-week abortion ban that was recently passed by Mississippi's Senate in the hopes that it will provoke a successful court challenge to Roe. In Mississippi, lawmakers passed what would be the nation's most restrictive abortion law. The House voted 75-34 last Thursday, making the procedure illegal in most cases after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And pregnancies, as a result of rape and incest, are not exempt.
Evil woman-hating abusers.
Forcing a raped woman or girl to carry a baby to term is no less than another assault on a woman, only this time it is a long assault akin to holding her hostage for 9 months and then torturing her in the form of labor. And then there are the emotional scars of either giving up her baby or having to raise it as a daily reminder of the worst experience of her life. Generously. The House bill grants two exceptions to the bill, and that is if the fetus has a health problem that would prevent it from surviving outside of the womb at a full term, or if the pregnant woman's life or a major bodily function is threatened by the pregnancy. And as the poorer, more conservative states in our union are prone to doing, they are positively giddy about the opportunity that they will soon be granted to waste their taxpayer money on court cases that they know they're going to lose. As already, the state's one singular abortion clinic has threatened to sue, which, of course, is exactly what Mississippi wants to happen. Lawmakers in the Republican-controlled legislature appeared to not only expect, but to encourage such challenges in hopes that the issue will eventually make its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Under the Supreme Court's 1973 Roe v. Wade, states, sadly, are permitted to restrict abortions after viability, which is the point when the fetus has a reasonable chance of surviving under normal conditions outside of the uterus. The ruling offered no legal definition of viability, saying that it could range between 24 and 28 weeks into a pregnancy. So, this Mississippi law is testing that line. There, of course, is no scientific basis to their 15-week ban. Catherine Klein, Equality Advocacy Coordinator for the ACLU of Mississippi, says, quote, court has never upheld anything under the 20-week viability marker. We expect that this bill will be challenged in court and will lose. And in the process, Mississippi will lose thousands upon thousands of taxpayer dollars, unquote. And Mississippi's not alone, of course. U.S. News & World Report says that a bill has been filed for Louisiana's upcoming legislative session. Lawmakers in Texas, Georgia, and some Midwestern states are exploring the idea. An appeals court in 2015 struck down efforts in North Dakota to ban most abortions after 6 weeks when a fetus develops a detectable heartbeat, and Arkansas after 12. Quote, I'm in the family way again. I am nearly crazy, for when my husband finds out that I'm going to have another baby, he will beat the life out of me. Please write to me and help me. Unquote. That was written by a woman in 1917 and published in a Birth Control Review, a 20th century magazine devoted to extolling the virtues of contraception. 100 years ago, abortion and contraception were both illegal, and even sharing information about how to prevent pregnancy was considered a criminal act. The following was written nearly a full century later. Quote, I am in need of help desperately. I'm pregnant and cannot have this baby. My husband is very abusive and did it on purpose because I wanted to leave. I need help. Please help me. Unquote. This was written to an amazing group called Women on Web, an abortion by mail service located in the Netherlands. This amazing group, Women on Web, receives the same type of correspondence messages from women struggling with unwanted pregnancies, terrified at their lack of options on a daily basis. The organization, which was founded in 2006, sends an abortion pill to women in countries where abortion is illegal and advocates for its safe use at home. One woman described herself in an email to Women on the Web as a 24-year-old, a single mother with 3 children. Her ex-husband left her, and she wrote that he refused to pay child support. Quote, I am almost 7 weeks pregnant. I need help. I'm feeling very desperate. I want desperately to be a good mother to the children I already have. I need an abortion. Please help me. Unquote. And yeah, over the past 100 years, we have seen great strides taken in women's right to choose. The feminist movement has made huge strides towards sexual and reproductive liberty. Birth control was fully legalized in 1972, and abortion followed suit in 1973. But after all these years of right-wing, anti-woman, anti-choice, Christo-fascist, nefarious methods have worked to make abortion hard, if not impossible, to obtain by a large percentage of women in this country. Both 100 years ago and today, women are not asking for abortions on the argument that this is their right,
even though of course it is.
They are doing so out of care and concern for their kids, or for their inability to give the baby the life it deserves, or for other family needs. According to the Guttmacher Institute, nearly half of abortion patients are below the federal poverty level, and 59% have at least one previous birth. Also, many of the letters, both in the 1900s and today, the women talk about ending their own lives as an option. That 23-year-old with the 3 kids lives in Ohio under Republican Governor Kasich, who successfully sells himself as a moderate. Meanwhile, under him, he has seen that Ohio has some of the harshest abortion restrictions in the country. Half of the clinics in the state have been forced to close their doors since 2011, and any woman seeking an abortion must go in person to the provider, then return home for 24 hours to reflect on her decision before getting the actual procedure. Not to mention the price tag on abortions, especially in places like Ohio. That woman continues in her letter to say, quote, to get an abortion, I would have to drive 2.5 hours to my house, pay $388. That is after the help from the abortion fund for people with low income, and then wait 24 hours, and then return to the clinic 2.5 hours from my house. There is absolutely no way I can afford this. Unquote. The lack of facilities that make women trek hours, if not days, away to get abortions also makes finding childcare a problem. Waiting periods are laws in 14 states, which means that women have to drive to a facility at least twice before an abortion. The Guttmacher Institute says, that 35 states require that women receive counseling before an abortion is permitted. 29 of those states detail the information a woman must be given. 6 states have abortion-specified requirements, generally following the established principles of informed consent. 27 of these states also require women to wait a specific amount of time, most often 24 hours, between the counseling and the abortion procedure. 14 states require that counseling be provided in person and that the counseling take place before the waiting period even begins, thereby necessitating the 2 different trips. 33 states require that a woman be told the gestational age of the fetus. 28 states include information on fetal development throughout the pregnancy. 13 states include information about the ability of the fetus to feel pain. 6 states require that the woman be told that personhood begins at contraception. 26 states include information about the risk of abortion. 3 states require medically inaccurate information that a medication abortion can be stopped after the woman takes the first dose of pills. 21 states include accurate information on potential effects of abortion on future fertility. In 4 states, the written materials inaccurately portray this risk. 5 of the 8 states that include information on breast cancer inaccurately assert a link between abortion and an increased risk of breast cancer. 8 of the 20 states that include information on possible psychological responses to abortion stress negative emotional responses. In Michigan, where over a dozen abortion clinics, health clinics, have closed over the past few years, one disabled woman wrote into Women on the Web begging for help as she lives off a disability, is all alone, and can only walk short distances. Conservative efforts have been alarmingly successful, and these Age of the Inquisition throwbacks believe that banning abortions will make them less frequent. And like so many things, they are just wrong. A report from The Lancet, a medical journal, shows that the abortion rate in countries that have banned the practice is actually higher than in countries where women have access to abortion. The most recent metadata of global trends published in 2012 discovered that the abortion rate, after a sharp decline between 1995 and 2003, scarcely changed over the following 5 years. However, the proportion of unsafe abortions rose from 44% to 49% of overall abortions. Worldwide, according to the World Health Organization, about 22 million unsafe abortions are performed every year. This means that they are performed by persons lacking the necessary skills or in an environment lacking the minimal medical standards. The WHO estimates that 47,000 women and girls die every year, and another 5 million sustain disabilities due to unsafe abortion. One modern woman emailed Women on the Web describing her own regime, quote, "I tried taking parsley and vitamin C at 10 weeks, added Dong Quai and black cohosh a week later, trying an herbal abortion. I didn't work," unquote. She later says that she started punching herself in the stomach repeatedly for 2 days, which didn't work either. She wanted to know what options she had left. 100 years ago, and much too much today, women are seen as no more than breeding machines. Last month, a conservative lawmaker in Oklahoma named Justin Humphreys referred to women in similar terms. While defending his widely maligned law that would require pregnant women to obtain written permission from their sex partners before getting abortions, he told The Intercept that, quote, "I understand that they feel like it's their body. I'm like, hey, your body is your body, and be responsible with it. But after you're irresponsible with it, then don't claim, oh, I could just go and do this with another body. When you're the host, you invited that in," unquote. Because yes, women are just hosts now. Unsurprisingly, in Oklahoma, this bill did pass out of the health committee. Of the 8 members on Oklahoma's public health committee, only 2 of them are Democrats, and only 1 is a woman. Look, I'll tell you one thing. All of these new anti-choice laws that continue to assault women in states across the United States could, possibly, backfire on these conservatives in 2018 elections. Take Mississippi, for example. In November, Democrats will be vying for 2 Senate seats and will likely try to replicate Alabama's historic win for the Democrats last year, mobilizing female voters on reproductive rights would be a daring but potentially effective strategy. In the 2016 election, the female vote skewed Democratic, so maybe Dems can use this in 2018. Electoral success in 2018 and beyond becomes more and more pressing each day, it seems. There is something long-term to consider. We could be coming up on a problem here in the United States. See, abortion is under threat from science,
of all things.
In 2017, scientists achieved a major breakthrough that could, one day, drastically improve the fate of babies born extremely prematurely. 8 premature baby lambs spent their last months of development in an external womb that resembled a high-tech Ziploc bag. At the time, the oldest lamb was nearly a year old and still seemed to be developing normally. This technology, if it works in humans, could one day prove life-saving for the 30,000 or so babies each year who are born earlier than 26 weeks into pregnancy, which is great. But do you see the problem here? This could also complicate, even jeopardize the right to have an abortion in America, in which that right is predicated on whether a fetus is viable. The goal of this technology, of course, is to be able to save premature babies, but it also highlights how fragile and dated Roe v. Wade is. It could wind up being that women only have the right to an abortion up until she can put a fetus in an artificial womb and it survive. And that is frightening. All this is a long way of saying that for the sake of women and men for generations, we need to take back not just the House, but the Senate in 2018 and keep them in 2020, regardless of what happens, because we need to be sure that the Supreme Court remains at least a little reasonable.
Women have told everyone to just fuck off. Tired of being judged for choosing to have children or not have children, to have children and go back to work, to have children and not go back to work, for being too thin, too fat, too pushy, too unambitious, too hot, not hot enough, or even for just daring to be alive, women have stressed that everyone can go fuck themselves.
Before I go, I have a follow-up and some good news. I talked on here about a Congolese woman who had turned herself and her daughter into ICE when she was seeking asylum. And ICE separated the mother from the daughter for the past 4 months. Well, the Chicago Times reports that bowing to pressure from a lawsuit filed by the ACLU and presumably concern about growing media coverage of the case, immigration officials released the mother on Tuesday afternoon, surprising even her immigration attorney in California. However, over the inhumane organization, ICE decided to release the mother into a parking lot, regardless of the fact that there was no one to meet her, and with no resources. The good news is the attorney was able to get to the mother and is now going to get her settled in a hotel. It is not yet clear when she'll be reunited with her daughter, who is in Chicago, under the care of the Office of Refugee Relocation, which is under the Department of Health and Human Services. The ACLU hopes that as soon as they find her a permanent place to live, that she will be able to take in her daughter. At least 200 U.S. human rights groups recently condemned the forced separation policy, saying that it would have, quote, significant and lasting consequences for safety, health, development, and well-being of children, unquote. This past Friday, the ACLU filed a class action lawsuit against Donald's administration about this below-the-radar practice separating children and parents. And again, we are so, so grateful for the ACLU. Okay, that's all the time I have. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K, Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice or on Facebook, where you will find all the stories I have told you and more on K Voice of Resistance. And I highly suggest you check out my friends Patrick Viles and Ryan Pfeiffer's podcast, Crab Diving, on the Crab Diving Network or on your favorite podcasting app. It is 2 hours a day where they rant, rage, and laugh about the news. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.